section.
Mm-hmm. You've watched the university really grow from the time it was established, yeah, right down through the present, now, down through the present.
I think the way Governor Jaws got over there, Governor Jaws was kind of lazy. He was a great counselor.
Uh-huh.
He sat around in his chair and talked. And as I say, my uncle Colonel James was standing out in front of him when he's with the shovel in his hand. The man standing out in front with the blue suit on and the flat top hat,
uh-huh,
was Colonel James. Uncle Dink, what I named for him. He didn't like that name for that in the government. He was always called Dink. And the two ladies are Mrs. H.J. White, who was my father's sister, Jenny James. The other lady, the younger lady, is Mary Jane Lipscomb, my uncle's daughter. They lived across the street from Governor Jaws, and Governor Jaws didn't have any way to ride.
Oh.
Uncle Dink's wife had a manga chair and had a, they call it a trap horse outfit, and they carried Governor Jaws over to the exercise.
Oh, and the day they had the groundbreaking. Uh-huh, that's on July 2nd.
Sister Mary, as we call her, drove the horse. And Jenny, Mr. H.A. White, he was a go-getter kind. Really pushed out to raise money.
Mm-hmm.
And,
so they all were in the picture then when they got there.
Standing out front, blue suit on, even all of them in the back. Mr. H.A. White is a man with a big gray Stetson hat.
Dressed for the occasion. They said it wasn't a planned event that they decided it was ready to break the ground, and so it was not one of those formal occasions.
Governor Jones had a way to get over there, see. And right down that, in that ravine, there was the town branch where the water ran through there. Muddy. No, the boys here, the Blunt Harvest was the chair, and then the Moy boys, and I used to hear them tell about people would buy shotguns from JRGG Moy. Mr. Moy, if you ain't satisfied, you have to take it out of town to fire it.
Mm.
Can't shoot a gun in town. So they take it down across that branch. Where the vein is, that was out of town. Yellow is hill. Come yellow when you lived up there on the hill. Well, the first man, become yellow is hill. That's what he was putting on the character. But the governor, Glenn, was, as I said, my uncle's roommate.
So that's how he got to be.
He got his title of colonel, and that's how he got the bull for East Carolina, for Greenville, as against Elizabeth City.
Oh, because your uncle was on the, he was in the legislature at that time. And he got Glenn to vote. Well, that's very interesting. Yeah. I was...
That's my recollection.
Well, it would make sense.
Governor Glenn came here.
Mm-hmm. They came to inspect the sites, I think.
One of the men that I remember that made quite a hit, had the open speaker. Mother and I walked over there with Dr. E.C. Brooks.
Uh-huh.
He was quite a humorist.
He was a younger man than...
He was a younger man. Kitchen was a governor there.
When the school was opened, that was in 1909.
Uh-huh. think my daddy went to Wake Forest now. He knew the Kitchens. Will Kitchen. I know Governor Kitchen was a very handsome man. Nice blue suit, back in collar. And while he was making his speech, he was a courthouse lawyer and have notes and manuscripts there. Supposed to get up and talk 2 hours. That's what he told me. Don't feel like making speeches there. I just want to tell the young man. Yeah. Talk to 5 o'clock. Anyway, Governor Kitchen was up there. His tie worked clean around him. Everybody got to watching that tie.
I wanted to pull it back.
He was completely unconscious of it. He was so interested in his speech. And finally, he felt it, straightened it out, and you never heard such a cheer go up. The girls, you know, the students know, when he straightened out his tie.
Applauded him.
Yeah, they really applauded him. He was completely unaware. They were nice men, though. Claude Kitchen, he was a power in the Woodrow Wilson era. And chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, even not for war. He fought it to the last. He mixed up.
Him and Brian,
Floyd,
I guess.
Entangling alliances. Yeah. The language of the Constitution. Yeah,
and Brian was so much against
it. Yeah, William J. Brown. Yeah. My father fought with William J. Brown, the greatest man in the world. He came to agree with that speech.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, he watched the old theater building there. But he was not in the heyday of the politics.
When he came later?
Yeah, uh-huh. He got to be four prisoners.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they say he was one of the greatest speakers
we've had. This man, Dr. McGregor Earl was one of the great characters of Greenland. Send me home a lot of land out that way.
Now, what was his name?
McGregor, E-R-N-U-L.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that name.
McGregor Earl. And then Brown, Adrian Brown. You know Reverend Adrian Brown, the Methodist preacher?
I've heard of him, man.
Well, he, Uncle Mac was there. He never married.
Mm-hmm. Was he from here?
Earl.
And Brown.
Oh, yeah, Brown.
And I know Wyatt. Is that Wyatt Brown's
Wyatt,
family?
Yeah, Wyatt Brown. Mr. Uncle Mac was Wyatt's, his father's uncle.
Mm-hmm.
They lived down on Dixon Avenue. Mr. Dr. Mac was a lieutenant. Civil War. Never married. And, he always had a remedy for everything. He made his own medicine. See, put a bottle of this.
Never
had the poison ivy bag before. Pump the candle down and sit down the back. This was a pickup. Put in a bowl and a turkey feather, so put the old salt in the bowl. Dried it up too. Back and had a remedy for everything. He owned some of the property that the university's on.
Oh, I know that the original lot was a Harrington, but then they bought a lot more beyond it. Yeah. That, I guess that was right on out in the country then,
you
when it was.
To the show, and his great admirer, William J. Brown, I think they, William J. Brown came to Greenland.
Mm-hmm, I think they were.
So they found out that he was coming, and he went to hear him speak, right there. He's a nice man. Noah had a baseball glove and kind of a rain on it. A small motor. I should be worried. And I ran home and forgot my glove. Stayed out all night. Shooting anyway. Got real hard. Dry. Also, when I go down to Dr. Mack, maybe he got some. Pulled some kind of oil. Said, rub that in. Good, man. It softened it up.
Made it work all right again. The grade school when you were.
Right,
I've seen pictures of it. Oh, it's right on that spot. I've seen the pictures, but I didn't. I think that's where the old academy was too, before.
That's right. I've seen pictures of that. Uh-huh. And Professor Raxton. Uptown, you'd see Professor Raxton a block away from the speaker. He was the superintendent. At the Baptist Sunday School, which is on Green Street. We lived in the city next to where the branch bank is. We'd go along, my mother would send us down to the Presbyterian Church, which was on the corner of Green and Dixon Avenue. Get my father to carry us across the street, and he'd stop. He was Baptist, or Professor Raxton stopped me back my brother home here. My wife said, take him to the Presbyterian. So he'd go down and he'd stop to see his brother, Dr. James. He was across from the fire station.
Was the Presbyterian Church the one that's down on Evans Street now?
No, it was the Presbyterian Church was a wooden building. It was on the corner of Green Dixon Avenue.
Uh-huh. And then they built the one on Pitt and Pitt and Evans.
On Fifth and,
I mean Fifth and Pitt.
Pitt Street. Mm-hmm. That was quite a step forward. The town was predominantly Baptist when I came along. Basement. Memorial windows of Dr. John C. James and Mary Langdon's in there, my grandfather. But my mother was raised in, she was born in Bath at an old church at Glebe House there. During the Civil War, they moved up to Washington to fight for some way. Church in Washington. She came up here as the man that was a coastline agent, Agent Moore, he got the Presbyterian movement started there. He came down out of Clinton back in that, that's Presbyterian, Scotch Presbyterian. Back in that building. And started. So they always stuck to, she was always a Presbyterian.
From Beaufort County.
Yeah, they come from. Mm-hmm. The Tulis, mother's maiden name was Tulis. She come from Hyde County.
Oh.
And my father's name, John Harrison, he lost his life in the Civil War. And she moved up to Washington. People used to have a seamstress to come in their homes and make everybody's clothes.
Mm-hmm. Stay a week and
stay a week. Yeah. So that's what she did. My mother got to know some of the old families in Washington that way. And they took her to the Presbyterian Church that was established down there at that time. During the Civil War.
Yeah, Washington's a much older town than Greenville.
Alley down there, I'm on the Union Alley. See this colonel come riding through there one day, and somebody shot him, killed him right in the alley. This soldier was in front of every house in Washington.
During their occupation there.
During the occupation there. Kept the horses in the Presbyterian Church. The old brick building. Potter. Yeah, my grandmother said when they shot an old pot, the women were all hidden in the cellars. And they had a cellar and put ice and stuff in there to keep things cool. Mm-hmm. They shot an old pot and everybody come out and shot.
Happy day.
Happy day, killed an old pot. They make them all come. Of allegiance, that kind of stuff. You mean, I mean, you have to be all important or something like that.
They didn't get up to Greenville.
Well, it wasn't much to Greenville then. It
wasn't enough to bother with, I guess.
This man, Jerry, I think he had a small store. Seemed like he had the river boats, flat bottom boats with back wheels, all cotton. If you had a back toes, if you had something for the ship, or if the ship had something for you, fertilizer or something like that, or you bought groceries in Washington or whatever, something, you get to the landing down there, back to the sea. It's not right off the river. Everybody had a toot on the whistle. If you had two toots, that would be not Fridays or whatever, not Jacobs. His land, you'd have two toots, and that would mean your fertilizer and supplies from Washington. They'd put off at Red Banks to come get it.
And you can hear it right far away,
yeah,
I guess.
Always out there. Back doors was a Greek. Was a Greek peddler. He got sick and old, couldn't travel much. And he didn't want to name it Tar Town, so he named it for this river that was near where his ancestors lived in Greece.
Much prettier than tar.
Back doors.
It was one of the major commodities, wasn't it, that time? I didn't realize it had gotten 5:30. That's what I came to hear you get you to. It's delightful. I have just enjoyed so much.
And
I regularly teach history. I'm a history teacher, but they asked me to take on this project to prepare a history of East Carolina. It's not going to be done for the 75th anniversary because it didn't get started in time. But it's supposed to be about a 75-year history of the school, and I was just trying to get some background information around it.
Well, one thing I used to hear Mr. Healy there from the evening balance, but my understanding was that election, $6,000, was not procedures of the North Carolina Constitution at that time, except that there was a provision that they can have special elections.
Mm-hmm.
And that a special election was, let's see, how did I used to contradict Mr. Dale or what he said, that he taught the ballots. Oh, I know. In a special election, the final decision is done by a majority of the registered voters.
Whether they're voting or not.
Whether they're voting or not. So he shouldn't have been eating up ballots or tearing them, because that would have diminished the majority.
See?
Yeah, because that...
Because in the special election now, they counted, say if they had 3,000 registered voters, then they would have to get at least 1,501 people
like
to vote. And if you didn't vote, it was the same as voting against
it. Yeah, that's right. They have a majority of the registered voters.
Uh-huh.
So Mr. Dale was quite a good friend of mine. And he was a worker for everything, but he was not a Harvard graduate. That was all right.
Yeah. They had to register specially,
didn't they, for the
special bond vote.
They had to go get out to be sure that they had a majority of the line. But I remember I ran an election for something that burned down. Yeah, I forgot what that was, man. And I was so particular not to register anybody that wouldn't come.
Vote. Yeah. Because that would be a negative vote.
Yeah, that's right. That would count against it.
Uh-huh.
I forgot what it was you voted for at that time. But anyway.
Well, I also figured out from an article in the Daily Reflector, Wichard printed the number of votes. This was before Dale's story, I guess, got circulated. And Wichard said that there were 328 registered voters in Greenville for this particular bond election. And there were 320 votes cast in favor. That five people, two were sick and three were out of town.
Mm-hmm.
So I figure it wasn't but three negative votes that he had to eat.
Yeah.
So if he had to eat the votes, it wasn't enough to make him sick.
Well, he didn't understand. He was all, he worked for whichever side was best. And. But I don't know, I was thinking about the one that I ran was when seemed like the Evans Street School was burned down. And that was located where the library, Shepherd Library.
Uh-huh. That's the one you went to?
And that's where I went to school, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it couldn't have been that, because Mr. Shepherd gave the money for that. I don't remember I ran a special election for something, and I was very particular not to let anybody register that I didn't think would be able to come and vote, because it wouldn't count.
Did you run it as a lawyer?
Yeah, as a lawyer, just to manage it. See, to have somebody to work
on
it. But it was something about connection with the schools. Because it may have been for the high school level, because Mr. Rose, he was a good friend of mine, and he helped me through school. And then Mr. Bob Fitzgerald, he used to be the county superintendent, I knew him well. And I practiced at first with Mr. Marvin K. Blunt, and Mr. Blunt and Mr. Bob Fitzgerald were good friends, and they were Kiwanians, go to meetings and things like that. And he was a fine gentleman, Mr. Fitzgerald was. But I was Mr. Dale, anything he did, if it was wrong, we forgive him. He was such a public spirited person.
He operated a
stable.
Brick
and
factory,
a brick yard,
too,
brick
didn't
yard.
He?
Yeah, he did run make mm-hmm. brick. Yeah.
And he built the home that the Chancellor lives in, the big brick house over on Fifth Street. Wasn't that Dale?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Miss uh-huh. Miss Mary. He said Miss Mary wanted it. And I know what a big hole they had. Two contractors had come here named Camden and Baker. And they, my mother, my father died in 1912, I think, and he always was saying that he didn't live to vote for Woodrow Wilson. And we rented out all the bedrooms, and we slept in the dining room. And this Mr. Camden, who laid the brick, he was a brickman, Mr. Baker. Which was it there? What building was it there? That was the, I don't know, that was the Shepherd, that wasn't the Shepherd Lyre, it was there, but I know Mr. Camden was an expert bricklayer. He laid the brick for that white brick house across the street there from the university.
Mm-hmm. The Chancellor, the
yeah,
Dale.
Yes,
yeah.
Right, with the Dale house there.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's another house there. He would go down there where I believe Mark Owens and Rouse have their law office now.
Oh, yeah, the lawn, because of the...
The building lawn there.
Mm-hmm.
And the lawn house, too, I believe. Yeah. I'm not sure about mm-hmm. that. And that's that mm-hmm. type of
yeah.
detail
mm-hmm.
pretty brick there. Mr. Camden. Mr. Baker got kind of on his feet, and he went back to Ohio. Mr. Camden stayed on here, and his wife liked it. She had children. He died of pneumonia, I think, during that flu epidemic in 1918. Mr. Camden, nice man. Camden and Baker.
I tell you, I think I'll be going, but I may back if that's all right. Yes, you have. I can.